Good evening, one and all. Yes, a Wednesday. Halfway through another one. Well, what can you say? Oh, excuse me, I've got a cough coming. Guess who forgot to get their tea today, this evening. Yes, so it's another week and another guest here on A Book and a Chat. I tell you, we've been going for like 9-10 years now. I think we're coming up to about 2,000 guests in that time. And a lot of interesting things is that sometimes we get authors that go on to, you know, write for films and work in the film industry. And sometimes we get people who are in the film industry finally get round to writing a novel. Well, it's one of the latters we've got today, because my guest today, she is a director, a screenwriter, a producer, known for lots of sort of evocative material type things with and the book today, I think we'll find out that that has moved over to the book, because on the show today I have the one and only Jan Eliasberg. Hi Jan, how you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you. You did a beautiful job of pronouncing my name, I have to say.
Well, I was sitting here practicing it in my head. I've got to say it right, Good to have you on the show. Debut novelist, but by no means a debut in the world of film, because lots of directing, lots of things, and screenwriting and producing. Was that your first love, or was the sort of the writing side, but you actually fell into the screen side?
Well, what I like to say is that, and I think this is really the truth, is that my first love was storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
And storytelling can take many, many, many forms. I grew up in New York. And I grew up in one of those families where Sunday, you could basically spend the entire day with the Sunday New York Times.
Right.
And it was my dream to have my name either at the top of the arts and leisure section or in the book review.
Wow. Oh.
And so those were my two possible paths. I started telling stories very young. I was one of those kids that would produce plays and
oh, lovely.
Make them and write them and direct them and sometimes even star in them, much to my brother and sister's annoyance, making them play the spear carriers and, you know, the parts that people didn't really want to do. And then I was quite a good writer in school. But directing became just a passion for me, and I ended up directing in the theater and going to Yale Drama School as a director, and it came so naturally that I just tumbled into what turned out to be a wonderful career, moving through the theater and then into film and television. Mm. And I don't want to ask questions, but, you know, don't let me just talking.
No, listen, it's your show. I'm just here to prompt you. That's no problem.
Okay.
No, I was going to say, I mean, obviously, when you write a novel, you are painting the picture with words. When you have a screenplay, you are painting, the picture is painted with the camera a lot of the time.
Yeah,
so
correct.
Do you find that when you're writing, were you sort of thinking of it in cinematic type things and then putting the words in to describe that view?
Yes, in a way. It's interesting when you write screenplays, there are two different aspects that you have to be very good at both. One is the narrative, which exactly as you say is writing the way the camera sees it. Mm-hmm. And the other is the scene work, which is dialogue.
Right.
Right. And dialogue is characters not saying what they want from each other, but wanting something really badly and saying it in an oblique way. And so the combination of having worked with actors my whole life and worked with good dialogue and bad dialogue and knowing the difference, I think, allowed me to access writing dialogue and then working with the camera. It was very much I would sit at my desk and I would imagine a scene in my head, mm-hmm. and then I would see the details and I would quickly, almost with my eyes closed sometimes so I could capture those details, I'd just quickly take notes on in a notebook, you know, a particular color of yellow or a particular shadow or a smell or a, just, you know, those things that so quickly in a film have to be in
just
there,
right.
just have to be right there.
See, that's interesting because one of the things we always say about, you know, writing novels is how, no matter how much you plot it out, the characters lead you. You know, they take you down different paths, minor characters, what major roles. And if they don't want to talk to you that day because you didn't listen the day before when they tried to tell you their story, that's when you get writer's block. It's not writer's block, it's the characters don't want to talk to you. But it sounds like with you, it's the same with visualizing, you know, the thing for the film. You have that. It's like the film is telling you in your mind, or showing itself to you, and that's how you pick it up. It's a very sort of similar sort of view to me.
Yes, and the characters talk to me,
yep.
and they also tell me when they don't want to say something. You know, when they like I have a lead character who's a very extremely brilliant genius of a woman who's a, you know, a nuclear physicist, which honestly I don't, you know, in third grade math and science, not my subject.
Right.
But somehow when I was in her shoes, she would tell me how to say things.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, of course I did a lot of research. So
right.
She knew more. She knew more than my third grade self. Mm. But it was a very intuitive process for me. And so really I don't think of it as being an enormous change. I think of writing that novel as being part of the whole progression of my storytelling.
Well, as we said about your screen work, I mean, people say, well, what's she done? Well, let's face it, you've directed hundreds of hours of award-winning television. 13 Reasons Why, I think that was Netflix, The Magicians, Bull,
Netflix.
Blue Bloods, NCIS, you know, Los Angeles Criminal Minds, etc., etc. It goes on and on and on. But now, as you're saying, you have produced your first novel. And based on a true person, was it?
It was. It was inspired by a true person. So I was sitting in the library doing research. You asked about writing screenplays.
Yeah.
You know, the thing about Hollywood is a lot of times you can write really good screenplays and people still will not make them because sometimes they think there isn't necessarily an audience for them. So one of the screenplays that I did write was about the women air service pilots in World War II.
Okay.
Now, these were the extraordinary women who trained in the military. They already flew planes when they were chosen, but they had to train in the military to become pilots working for the government.
Mm-hmm.
And they were extraordinary women, you know. I mean, the women you'd love to just hang out at a bar with and spend the whole night with them, you know. I mean, all of them and not in, – never mind. I know, in the bar.
I know what you mean. I've come across a couple of stories about I've forgotten the name for them. The women that delivered the planes, you know, unarmed and everything like that.
Yes. Well, some of them were WASP, Women Air Service Pilots.
Yeah.
Some of them were part of the ferrying project.
Right.
Anyway, they were great women. So I did a screenplay about them, and I had Nicole Kidman and I had Cameron Diaz attached, to star. And I was doing research for that screenplay, and I was in the library. I was reading about the day we dropped the bomb on Hiroshima.
Yep.
The anniversary of which is coming up on August 6th.
Right. I know it's coming soon. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. And I looked at the front page, and there was a huge headline, you know, arresting Truman vows reign of ruin X number of thousands civilians killed. And then, of course, the New York Times had to tell the whole story of the development of the Manhattan Project because it had all been done in secret.
Right.
And no one knew. Even some of the scientists who worked at Los Alamos didn't know what they were working on. So there is the New York Times telling the story of the development of this whole thing. And in maybe a paragraph below the fold, it said, the key component that allowed the Allies to develop the bomb was brought to us by a, quote, female, non-Aryan physicist. And I, in that moment, I thought, who is this woman?
Right.
Why have I never heard of her? Why isn't her face staring out of every scientific textbook? Because this was the greatest discovery, certainly the biggest discovery of the 20th century. And it's not as if there were all these women around being, you know, nuclear physicists. So I determined to find out her story and to write her story in that moment. And then, of course, I had to research for about just for a couple of months to find the woman. Her name was Dr. Lisa Meitner, and she was Austrian Jewish, living in Berlin. She was working in Berlin at the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute, which was the foremost research institute in the world. And as she was working, the Nazis were rising to power. And she and her partner, who was a man who was Aryan, a German, were getting closer and closer to splitting the atom. And in, I mean, it's such a screenplay, I have to tell you. It's such a movie.
Right.
Because as they were right on the verge, the Nazis marched in and took over the institute and made the institute a military institute, a military fort. Basically, they said everything that's done here is now being done for military purposes, for weapons use only. And within 6 hours, after people had promised her, Lisa Meitner, that she would be fine, that no one would touch her, that they would save her, that, you know, she, one of her own colleagues called the Gestapo and said, "Here, she's here."
Wow.
And she had 6 hours to flee the country or be taken to the camps.
Mm-hmm.
So she fled to Sweden, very hair-raising, almost didn't make it. But what happened was when she ended up in Sweden, her German partner, Otto Hahn, who stayed in Germany, could not work without her. So he went to meet with her in Sweden, and they devised the experiments together. He would come back to Germany and do them. And then because he didn't understand them without her, she was the, she analyzed what had happened and did the calculations. He would send the experiment results to her via courier on a postcard. And she was the one, she was snow skiing in the middle of you know, Sweden.
Yes.
And she stopped, and with her ski pole, she started to do equations in the snow, and she said, I know what happened. The only way to account for these results is if we split the atoms.
Yeah. So, amazing, amazing. As you say, what a great film. You can just imagine it, can't you? Doing all that. But I guess, I mean, she ended up in America, did she?
Well, she didn't, and that was where I deviated from the story.
Okay.
She did not end up in America. She stayed in Sweden, and she her partner went on to get the Nobel Prize, which of course she deserved
as
much more than he did.
Yeah.
And she was in the audience, and she wrote in her diaries, "I'm so disappointed that he didn't mention my name."
Right.
And so I became possessed with this idea that I would write fiction, because there had been a biography of her, so I didn't feel that a biography was missing from you know, from the canon, but I felt that capturing the the frenzy and the creativity of that kind of collaboration. And also realizing that the story of what went on at Los Alamos was intricately tied in with what was going on in Germany, mm-hmm. because Los Alamos never would have happened. Oppenheimer, no one would have come to work on the atomic bomb in the way that they did if people hadn't believed that the Germans were minutes away from getting the atom bomb themselves.
And this is what you do in your book, which is actually called Hannah's War, with the main character in your novel, as I say, based on that wonderful story. Dr. Hannah Weiss, you've got. And go ahead.
And so what I did was Los Alamos was filled with emigre German, Jewish, Eastern European scientists. I mean, it was almost as if they took all of the brilliant minds of Germany and Eastern Europe and, you know, and put them on the mountaintop in New Mexico mm-hmm. and sort of let them at it. And so most of the scientists were very, very emotionally involved because they had family back in Germany or they had family in Eastern Europe. They had family in the camps. And so their desire to get that bomb was as personal as it could possibly be
right.
and as emotional as it could possibly be. And they were given all the resources. And I think that what happened there is that the military created a situation in which they were so motivated that they were almost ripe to be manipulated. Now, the military wanted, many people wanted the bomb for many different reasons. And it was very easy, I think, for everyone to agree that absolutely the most horrible imaginable thing would have been if Hitler had gotten it first.
Oh, and okay. So that would have been it. Yeah.
Exactly, because we knew what he was capable of. I mean, England would have been, you know.
Oh, he already had the V3s and stuff like that and jet fighters.
Yes,
I mean, it was already there, but just not.
Yes.
Yeah.
He just hadn't gotten, you know, what they had, done when they split the atom was the science that allowed the development of the bomb.
Yeah.
So all we did was we sort of gathered all the scientists in one place. That was the Manhattan Project. And with the military sort of, you know, guarding everything and making sure that there were no spies or trying to make sure, because in fact there were spies, they sort of set everybody to work in this crazy place up in, you know, on the Mesa in New Mexico. And the scientists were working on this, you know, like madman discovery, right? I mean, the amount of killing that this one weapon, they didn't have any idea.
Yep.
They didn't know what would happen. They some people thought that they would incinerate the world's atmosphere. Mm. I mean, nobody knew.
No.
But they also were so excited about this collaboration because they had everything they needed. They had the greatest minds. So, you know, there were stories of these guys like walking into the men's room and writing part of an equation, and then another scientist would come in and write the next part. I mean, it's almost like they were all at summer camp. And they rode horses, they skied, you know.
Yeah.
Oppenheimer threw these fabulous parties with lab alcohol to spike the punch. So they would have these parties with 200 proof alcohol.
Oh, my goodness.
So what I did was I put this woman who had a very strong moral compass and who had seen what happened in Germany when the military took over pure science. She had not only seen it, she had experienced it. And I put her in Los Alamos where the very same thing was happening, but in a much more subtle way.
Well, the thing I wonder about Hannah was, you know, you said that it got leaked to the New York Times or whatever, you know, in your book, was she suspected of being a spy at one point then?
Yes, she absolutely was.
Ah, right.
Aha. So the book is an espionage thriller.
Ah, right. And
you see people, you know, people, women's fiction has a certain kind of, women's historical fiction has a certain sort of audience to it. Women very interested in history. Sometimes romance is involved, and indeed there is not only one. There are two romances.
Oh,
in
wow!
My book. However, what is also true is that this book is a page turner. I mean, this is a book that men love because it's a spy story,
right?
And it's a really sort of edge of your seat kind of who is the spy? Is she a spy? Is she a spy? Isn't she a spy? Is she a spy? Is she a spy? Why is she
right.
a spy?
Right.
Oh, maybe she's not. Maybe somebody else is. I mean, so there are all of these fabulous. I'm blowing my own horn.
I've said this to me. Exactly. I've read it myself.
They can't put the book down.
And that's,
because
you
they
can't
want
ask,
to know what happened.
Exactly. And that's all you can ask. I mean, it's like the old, I always compare it to the old Saturday morning pictures, you know, come next week, leave you on the edge of the seat with a heroine tied to the railway track sort of thing. You know, if you've got a book that you're reading it and you say, I'll just read to the end of the chapter and, oh no, I can't leave there. I'm going to have to read the next one to find out. Oh no, I'll have to, next thing you know, it's like 4 a.m, you know. That's it.
That's it. Those are my complaints. I get emails saying I didn't get enough sleep last night, and it's because of you. Your book.
I mean, you feel bad, but it's a big compliment when you think about it. You know,
it's so much fun when you're involved in a book like that. I mean, my favorite books, honestly, are the books that I cannot put down.
Right.
You know, and I include War and Peace in that too.
Wow.
I mean. You know, these are great books. So yes, I really tried to write the kind of book and the kind of film that I love myself.
So talking about film, I mean, now the book's done. Is the film next? Are you doing the screenplay for it?
Well, if I told you, I would have to kill you.
Oh, okay, fair enough. Forget I asked it. I've got a few years left. Forget I asked.
But you know... You wouldn't be. You're right to be asking.
Right.
I'll just say that
it's
not completely out of. You know. You're.
Let's turn it
people
to a.
People are talking.
Right.
People are talking.
People.
That's all
yeah.
I'll say.
Your people have
talking.
Met other people. Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
But
yes.
Let's turn it around another way. Now you've written one novel. Are you going to write a second novel?
Oh, absolutely, 100%. I've already started.
There you go. is it like you see ideas and comes up, or is this one something different, or I don't know. You could always carry the character over. I don't know.
Well, I don't know. I think there is actually another story to be told out of this novel, but it's not to do with Hannah.
Mm-hmm.
It's to do with a secondary character in the book that took on. As you say, started talking to me and took on far more life than I was expecting.
Yes, indeed. Yes.
And suddenly other people started to say, well, what happened to her?
Yeah.
What happened to her? And so, yes, but I don't know that I want to tell that story right away.
Right.
I have another story in mind that puts me in a different place, a slightly different time period. And... So really, that's what I'm
working on right now.
Yeah.
Are you sort of now you've got the sort of writing part as well? You know, the novel part. Are you sort of trying to how are you managing to manipulate the time across both?
That's a big question.
Lack of sleep is.
COVID is helping because I really can't do anything else except walk
the dog. Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Although I will say that being so worried about COVID and about, you know, everything surrounding it, it doesn't help creativity because, you know, to be creative, you can't have a lot of sort of worries on your mind.
Yeah.
It's really nice when you can kind of turn the world off a little bit. I think what will end up happening as I sort of balance these things is kind of, a novel one year and maybe a movie the next.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't, you know, I love writing novels. I love writing fiction.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm very much still involved as a director, in the Directors Guild. I've just gotten more sort of choosy, I guess, that I would like to do more work that I initiate.
Mm.
So I'm kind of hoping that the WASP, the Women Air Service Pilots
yes.
Project,
yep.
might now get some interesting new traction. Because I think women's stories now have become, people are far more interested in them than they were when I originally wrote that.
Very true.
Years ago.
It's not just that. I mean, the female, the harder female character in detectives and stuff like that, a lot more people writing with female leads. We've had a lot
Indeed.
On the show the last 4 or 5 years. So there's definitely, and when it's the time, that's when you go. Steve Berry, comes on the show every year with his book he writes each year. And he always tells us that, he spent 10 years with rejections because it wasn't the time for his sort of his adventure type stuff. Then it took off, and after 10 years of rejections, of 10 rejection sort of things, four of his got accepted just like that, and he plagiarized the rest of them to make up some of the next books, and that's where it started. So when your time's there, your time's there. It sounds like you're right for it now.
I hope so, because, I've been wanting to tell these stories about women like this
right.
all my life.
Well.
And I've always felt like, people say, well, we just, no one's interested in a female lead. A movie about women flying. Ugh, no.
Of course not. No. Well, I know
now
that
I'm like.
I know that people who've been listening to you will totally disagree with that and look forward to reading your book, but the time is running out on us. So what I'm going to do now I know it's gone so quick, Jan, is hand the show over to you so you can tell everybody where they can find out more about you and, of course, your book, Hannah's War.
Absolutely. Well, so Hannah's War is on sale right now anywhere you'd like to buy or order books. I happen to know that there is a Kindle special going on at this moment. So if anyone really wants to rush to, online, I think you can get it for a very good price. And then I have a website which is filled with everything, my research, all of the work I've done as a director, all of the work I've done as a screenwriter, tons of information for book clubs that are interested in discussing Hannah's War, and even ways to reach me if you'd like me to come and Zoom in and talk with
there
your
you
book
go.
Club. So that is www.JanEliasberg, that's JanEliasberg, JanEliasberg.com. And if you can repeat that in your wonderful voice.
I will. Well, Jan, sorry to rush you, but thank you so much, because I don't want us to get chopped before I had time to say thank you so much for being a guest on the show. It's been great, and good luck with the book.
Thank you. I've really enjoyed it.
Well, there you go. My guest today, Jan Eliasberg. That's JanEliasberg. JanEliasberg.com. Terrific. Go and look at the site. Look at the reviews of the book. Hannah's War. Really, really interesting. Well, interesting, that's it. But I'll be back here on Sunday Well, of course, my music shows, 5 till 6 p.m. Eastern. We have Those Are the Days, music from the 20th century. And we do have a theme this week. I said we weren't going to have another theme this week, but somebody contacted me, and it's police, basically. Police, robbers, thieves, all that sort of stuff. So that's the theme on Sunday at 5 to 6. And then, of course, from 6 to 7 p.m. on here on New Visions Radio, we have the Swinging 60s, with music from the 60s, if you can remember that far back like me. Well, that's it for now. I'll see you then. Just one thing left to say. Don't forget. Make sure it's working.